commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
This was a big week for the Large Hadron Collider.
We haven't talked about that.
It's been out
of
the news for 2 years. Mm-hmm. They basically, for 2 years, they've been refitting it. Now they've cranked it up to a higher energy beam, and the thing is working like clockwork.
I need to find the Hadron Collider.
Yeah,
girl
Large
songs.
Hadron Collider. And so hadrons are basically heavy particles like protons. And so they basically smash heavy particles against each other. And we'll talk about what they hope to discover. There's also some news about the observation of an Einstein ring. Did you hear about the Einstein ring?
I did not, no.
It's an artifact of general relativity where gravitational objects can actually bend the direction of light. So this Einstein ring is kind of interesting. So this is stuff that I'm interested in, so... So I just assume
so
that
you
all
get to talk about
so
it.
So I just assume that
show.
I assume that all Tech Talk listeners are also interested in it. And the driverless car drove all the way from California to New York for the auto show.
I've heard there are some problems with these things too.
Well, there could be problems, but this was a relatively successful visit. But
when I'm in a driverless car, I think I want something better than relatively successful.
You know the biggest the biggest problem with driverless cars is motion sickness.
Really?
Yeah, that what they discovered was motion sickness is an issue. So if you're in your driverless car, make certain to have a couple of baggies with you.
Well, nice.
And I'll talk about how to combat that problem, but that was one of the big problems.
I can't wait to this discussion because I want to tell you what I heard too but that's interesting.
And of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Giant.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Look at that.
Oh yeah.
Right on cue.
Oh, right on cue. Big box of mail. You know, it was so big this week, it's not a mailbag, it's a mailbox. Yeah, that's right. We got an email from Leslie in Fairfax. Dear Tech Talk, I think my neighbors are using my Wi-Fi connection.
Uh-oh.
How can I tell if they are? How can I stop it? Thanks, Leslie in Fairfax. Well, you know, using somebody else's Wi-Fi network, if you can get on it, is one of the great American pastimes because then people don't have to sign up for internet. And you can just, of course, stream movies. You can get all your entertainment packages right through that internet connection. And so you've got to watch out for that. Now, what you can do, Leslie, you can log on to your router to see which computers are using it. That's very easy to do. That means you got to know the password to your router. Now, hopefully, you know that. Now, you've probably written it down somewhere. If it was a router that was installed by, say, one of the major ISPs like Verizon, they probably put a password in it, and then they put a little sticker on the side of the box. If you don't remember the password, you can always call up your ISP to see if they still have the password. Now, of course, what I do, I immediately change the password because I don't want my Verizon rep to know my password,
right.
So I immediately change my password. If, in fact, you're in the condition that you can't remember the password, there's always a reset button on the back of the router, and you can hit reset, and it just resets everything back to factory settings. But that means everything's set back to factory settings, so then you got to make certain you know how to configure the router. So there have been times when I've reset routers, but in any case, let's assume that you know the password. Then you want to go to the web address of your router, and that's a four-digit number, like 192.168.1.1. That would be one of them. And the other option, there are actually only two addresses that are used. The other one would be 192.168.0.1. And I'll have these posted to the Tech Talk radio show outline. We'll get that posted Monday morning. Now you can log on, and then if you go to under the router features, you can look up log, and you can see which computers have been logging on, how many computers are logged on, and whether there are more computers logged on than just yours. Now you want to make certain that you've got encryption with a password, so that your neighbors, you know, if a lot of times people will hack into they're really not hacking. They'll just use your Wi-Fi if you don't password protect it, or if you don't encrypt it. So you want to use, if you got neighbors that really are sneaky and want to get onto them, you want to use WPA2. That's the most difficult difficult encryption method to use. Now the WPA2, it's a protocol where the key is changed with every packet. So it turns out that it's very hard, if you don't know that, you know, it's very hard to calculate it, because mm-hmm. the encryption key is changed so often. It rotates very quickly through a lot of encryption keys, and so it's very hard to decrypt it. You basically have got to do it very quickly before the key changes, and so that takes a lot of horsepower. So WPA2 is difficult to crack. Now the old WEP, Wireless Equivalent Protocol, WEP, that's the old protocol. That just uses a single 40-bit key, and it never changes. I can download a program, and in 10 minutes, I can calculate your key. So if you're running WEP, I can log into your Wi-Fi in 10 minutes, even if you're running encrypted.
Yikes.
Not, of course, that I would do it.
No, you wouldn't do that.
I have the potential to do it. So WEP,
you have the know-how.
So WEP is not a very secure encryption method. So if you got a sneaky neighbor, you want to use WPA2. So that would be that's all I really think you have to do. WPA2 with 128-bit key, which is going to, your neighbor's not going to have a computer fast enough to catch you, and then you'll be all set. But that's worth checking into, and I love your letter. We got an email from Mary in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, I used your recommendation last week for converting my PDF to a Word document, which was pdfonline.com. And I uploaded my 28-page PDF, and it didn't work.
No.
It didn't work.
No.
What's wrong with your recommendation? Do you have any other options? I attached the document for your review. Well, I took a look at the document, Mary. It is 28-page PDF. And you upload it to PDF Online. It's such a big document. They say, you know, it's just going to time out on you. We want you to buy the paid version of PDF to document conversion software, so they wouldn't convert it because mm-hmm. it was actually too long. It wasn't that your document was locked. It wasn't locked. They just didn't want to convert it because they thought if you got a 28-page document, you ought to be paying. So I went to two or three other online. I've never really converted such a long document, so that I've never had that problem before. I went to two or three other PDF to Word conversion online services and got the same answer, but then I finally found one that worked. It's docs.zone/pdf-to-word. Huh. docs.zone/pdf-to-word, and it just whipped through and converted your document perfectly.
Cool.
So you can I'll get this link to the post to the web on Monday. Then you can upload your document. You convert it for free. We got an email from Alice in Wonderland. You know, occasionally she comes out of the rabbit hole and
she does,
and communicates with us, because the Wi-Fi down in the rabbit hole is just adequate.
Not
adequate at all. Dear Dr. Schertz, at home I'm a Mac user, and 2 years ago I kissed my PC goodbye. Now, I'm about to begin a new job where I'll be living in a Microsoft office that only has PCs. And now, I think I've got to buy a PC laptop and get it loaded with MF Office so I can work in the office. Now, I do mostly Word documents. Can you recommend a decent PC laptop brand to go with? Or, I'd much prefer to use the Mac. Is there any way that I could use my MacBook and get Windows and Microsoft Office to run on it like they're running on a PC? I've got MS Office 211 for the Mac, but it's different than the MS Office for Windows. In fact, it has fewer features. What are my options? Thanks, Alice. Well, first of all, Alice in Wonderland, I would not buy another computer. You got one.
What?
No, I would not. I would keep your Mac because you can run Windows on your Mac.
That's right. You can.
Without any problem. And I'm going to tell you how to do it.
Okay.
You want to run Windows on your Mac. See, the Mac actually has got the Intel chip. So you can run Windows natively in your Mac. So here are the two ways to do it. One way is to set up a virtual machine. A virtual machine. Now, this is basically you have a thin layer that sits on top of the Macintosh operating system. And that thin layer acts like it's a Windows machine. So when you install Windows, the Windows operating system, it will just install on that as though it's installing on the native machine without the Mac underneath it. And so you can have basically you can run two virtual machines at once. You can run your Mac operating system and you can run your Windows operating system side by side. They're both virtual. You could have two windows. You could have Windows in one window and the Mac operating system in another window. Now there are two virtual options that you have that you pay for. One is VMware Fusion. VMware was one of the first companies to get into virtual machines. So VMware Fusion was really designed specifically for the Mac. But then there's also another one called Parallels Desktop. Now, I checked around. See, I'm not using this, but I checked around with all the Mac pros, and I'm telling you, Parallels Desktop, people just love that as a virtual interface, and it costs $79. So you could get Parallels Desktop for $79, install that, and then you've got your virtual machine, and then you'd have to install Windows operating system. So that means you'd have to Windows disk. Then you'd have to have your Microsoft Office that you'd have to install. And unfortunately, Microsoft Office for Mac is not going to work on Windows. You're going to have to buy another version of Microsoft Office, and you can't port them over between the two. And then you could run both Windows and Mac on your same machine. And that, I believe, is your best option since you're only working Word. Now, on the other hand, Mary, maybe you're a hot gamer, and maybe you... Maybe you like to really crank up the graphics, the 3D graphics on your machine with all sorts of high-speed gaming. In that case, the virtual machine is not your best option because it's a little bit slower because you've got this software emulator running, you know, between you and the machine, and it slows it down. So if you're running very high-speed 3D graphics, and you want to use the full capacity of the machine, you're going to want a dual boot mode. You see, the Mac machine has an Intel operating system, so actually you could install Windows directly on that if you'd want. And so what you do is you set it up in dual boot, and so when you turn on the machine, it says, do you want the Mac operating system or do you want the Windows operating system? And you pick one, and then you boot up in Windows. Now, the disadvantage here is that when you're in Windows, you're only in Windows, so you can't go back and forth between a Mac app and a Windows app. You're just in Windows or the Mac in that dual boot. Now, then if you actually boot up in Windows, you're actually running native code right on top of the processor, and you can get great, great graphics speed. So there's a program called Boot Camp that will allow you to do the dual boot. So I'm thinking if you want to do the dual boot, you're going to have to buy Boot Camp. And then you'll still have to also get your Windows operating system and your Microsoft Office. But based on your letter, you don't seem like a hot program game player to me, somebody that's playing these super fast 3D graphics. It sounds like you just want a business application. So I'm thinking the virtual machine is the best, and Parallels is going to be your best option. Now, your final option, this is the cheapest option, actually, just use Remote Desktop. So what you could do is you could install Remote Desktop on your PC at work, and then you could log in by VPN to your Remote Desktop at work. And when you're at home on your Mac, your Remote Desktop from your work computer just shows up on your Mac.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't even need, you know, your Mac just becomes essentially a dumb terminal, and you're using your machine at work. So if you've got the ability to do remote desktop through your business, you could use the Mac in the remote desktop mode. So like at Stratford, we're running a whole bunch of remote desktops in our server room. So we've got students who can use remote desktop, staff can use remote desktop. So that's a common method that we use for distributing applications and capacity around. So those are your three options. You've got the virtual machine, the dual boot machine, or the virtual desktop. But I do not recommend that you buy another machine unless you just love to spend money.
On a machine she doesn't even want to have.
On a machine that you hate. Yeah, that's right. We got an email from Lily in Virginia. Dear Doc and Jim, occasionally the taskbar can get moved to somewhere other than the bottom of the screen. I'm running Windows, by the way. It's currently on the right side of my screen, and it's really hard for me to use it. I mean, how can I get it back to the bottom of the screen? Love the show, Lily in Virginia. Well, this is one of the funny things. You can move that taskbar around in Windows. It's very easy to do. But you have to, you have to unlock the position. So what you do is you find an unused area on the taskbar where there's not an icon, and then you right click, and that little menu will come up, and go down where it says lock the taskbar. You uncheck that, and then you go back to a place that's not used on the taskbar, and press the left mouse button and hold it. And then drag the taskbar down to the bottom, and it'll just pop down. You can either put it on the bottom, the top, the right, or the left, no problem. And then as soon as you put it on the bottom where you like it, you go to an unused place on the taskbar, right-click, and then you lock the taskbar position so it can't be moved. Mm-hmm. So this is what happens. People don't lock their taskbar position and it moves. But I'm telling you, a really funny April Fool's joke. Is somebody who really doesn't know that much about computers? So you take their taskbar and you drag it to the top of the screen, say. You unlock it, drag it to the top of the screen, and then lock it. So if it's in a locked position, they can't drag it down.
That's funny.
And then you just watch what they do. And watch how they try to use their Windows with the start button on the upper right-hand side and all the icons along the top.
And hope that they don't punch you.
Now, I, of course, would never do that.
No, never.
I would never do that. But it is kind of a funny thing to do.
If you say so.
Yeah, but I certainly never would never, ever, ever do it in 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's one more thing I wanted to tell from my last email. I forgot Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in her computer.
Yeah,
problem.
Yeah. You know, if you need a Word, you know, I told you you'd have to buy your Microsoft Office. Well, you could actually get Office 365, and you pay every month for that. If you get the base, and then you don't have to buy the big Microsoft Office version. If you get the basic version of Office 365, it's $5 a month.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the business version, it's got a few little bells and whistles, it's $8.50 a month. If you get the premium version, it's $12.50 a month. I'm thinking you could get by with the basic version at $5 a month. Just see how it is. It's not a contract. You can cancel it anytime you want. So that would be another option for you to get. To get Office on your machine without actually buying it. So now we've got a letter from Tung in Ohio.
Uh-oh, this could only be trouble.
This is only trouble. Dear Doc and Jim, I take lots of photos at the parties that we have here in Ohio, and my iPhone is always filling up. Now, I need a convenient way to store all the images on my iPhone. What are my options to store these things in the cloud? Love the show, Tung in Ohio. Well, Tung, first of all, I recommend you put really a good password on your photographs. Because
yes.
I don't think you want to share those photographs broadly. But maybe just for local distribution, I would hope. Well, there are many cloud storage options that we have. Now, I'll talk about just a few. I'm going to talk about Dropbox, Google Drive, and OneDrive. You also have iCloud, of course, on your iPhone, which you can upload it to the iCloud. Now, the problem with the iCloud is that if you don't sync your photos right, it deletes your pictures from the iCloud. Like if you delete them from a device, it'll delete them from the iCloud. So it's not necessarily photo archival. Mm-hmm. It's basically photo synchronization between devices. And then if you want to save your photos permanently, you've got to put them someplace else. The iCloud is basically used for synchronizing, not for archival of photos. So I wouldn't use iCloud if you want to back up your photos permanently. Now you've got Dropbox, was one of the first big cloud storage devices. And they have clients for Linux, for BlackBerry, as well as Windows, as well as Mac, Macintosh, Android, and iOS standards. They actually have got them all. They even came out with a Windows Phone interface in January 2015. Now, the basic account is free, and you get 2 gigabytes of storage. So I've had a Dropbox account for years. Like, I upload a lot of my drone pictures and share them mm-hmm. on my Dropbox. But since it's only 2 gigabytes of storage, I'll remove them and put other ones up there. Now, if you want to pay $12 a month, you can get 1 terabyte of storage, which is a lot of storage for $12 a month. And Dropbox is really convenient. You also have the ability, you can right-click on a photo and it gives you a link that you can share. So you can share photos with people without having to send the photos all over the place. Or you can put your photos in a subdirectory and you can share the whole subdirectory. So it's a very nice way to share photos. If you want to share them. Now, there is also Google Drive. Now, Google Drive is the heart of all the online services that Google currently offers. Now, you get 15 gigabytes of free space. Now, chances are you've already got a Google Drive account if you have Gmail, Google Calendar, or YouTube. So, like, everyone knows you've got a Gmail account, they say you got 15 gigabytes of storage. That's your Google Drive storage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can pay a little bit a month, and you can increase that. So that's what I do. I was running out of, because I send all of the, I send all the Tech Talk radio show files every week to people for posting to the web. So my Gmail account is just getting lots and lots of copies of Tech Talk in it. And so I was running out of space with my 15 gigabytes. So I just bought more space on my Google Drive, and I'm paying $10 a month or something, but it's very convenient. Now, Google stores all of the files in an encrypted format with 128-bit encryption key. Now, Box, OneDrive, and Dropbox use 256-bit encryption key. Now, the importance of this is that your photos and your documents are stored in a highly encrypted state. So, like, somebody could not subpoena the records from, say, from Google or from Microsoft to get all of your documents, because those companies don't have the encryption key. Only you have the encryption key to actually see what's in it. So it gives you some degree of privacy and security. So if you've got any kind of Google systems, Google Drive's a nice option for you. Now, OneDrive. That's the Microsoft cloud storage. That's also used to be called SkyDrive. Now, they give you 15 gigabytes of storage, but you can, for about $10 a month, you can jack that up to 1 terabyte of storage. And if you've got any kind of Microsoft account, you probably got OneDrive already. Like I've got an Xbox account, so I discovered a while ago that I had a OneDrive account with 15 gigabytes of storage. So those are all your options, Tung. And so I would recommend that you back up. This is one of the things that people do. They don't back up their photos, and their photos become such an important historical record, and all of a sudden they're lost. So Listen, we love your emails.
We do indeed.
Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll get back to you at the next show, and we might even email you directly.
That's right, if you're really special. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.9 FM HD2. We'll be right back after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we are featuring Linda Weinman. Linda Weinman is best known as co-founder of the online software training website, lynda.com. This, by the way, is the is one of the online resources that we provide to all of our Stratford University students for free. Part of our great online learning resource center capability for all of our students. So Linda Weinman was born January 24th, 1955 in Hollywood, California. In 1976, she received a Bachelor of Arts in Humanities from the Evergreen State College. And, of course, the Evergreen State would be Washington, State of Washington. So that's in Olympia, Washington. A year after graduating, Weinman opened up a couple of retail stores, Vertigo in Melrose and Vertigo in Sunset, at Los Angeles. And they both went belly up by 1982. So she wasn't really good in retail. She actually taught herself computer skills, and after she began using her self-taught computer skills in the film industry as a special effects animator. Now, she worked for DreamQuest doing animation and special effects. She worked on a few films like RoboCop 2, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which I've never heard of. Star Trek,
You've never heard of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
No, I've never.
I think you need a dumb night of TV, and you need to watch that.
I'm just a sheltered boy. Yeah. Hey,
you lead a productive, full life.
I'm just sheltered from all this culture. She also helped with Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. Okay, I think I know about that one.
I think you do, yes.
Star Trek, okay, now we're getting to my cup of tea.
You're in your wheelhouse.
That's right. Weinman attributes her initial interest in computers to having taught herself to use the Apple II that her boyfriend happened to bring home one day.
How about that?
That's right. So that's what got her. So from 1989 to 1996, she taught digital media and motion graphics at the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, California. In 1995, she wrote her first book on graphic design, and it was published by New Writers Press. Now, actually, she ended up, over her whole career, published 16 books, all dealing with some kind of computer software applications. In 1999, she founded the how would you pronounce that? OJAI. Ojai. Uh-huh. Digital Art Center in Ojai, California.
Well, there you go.
And in 1995, she started lynda.com website. See, that's the same year that she wrote her first book, and she created a website that would provide additional exercises that would supplement the book. Mm-hmm. That's why she started it. Hmm. But a couple of years after 1995, that would be 1997.
Of course it would. 97.
She decided to incorporate it and say, you know, it's not a bad idea. Why don't we just start a company, lynda.com?
There you go.
So lynda.com evolved from the original conception of like a free resource for Linda's students. Then it turned into a site for her books on web design. Then it turned into a registration hub for physical classrooms and conferences, and finally it turned into a virtual online library. So it was kind of an evolving business that she got into. Lynda.com was founded in Ojai, California. Then it moved to Ventura, California, and then to Carpinteria, California. That be how you pronounce
it? I think
it?
You're on that too, yes.
Carpinteria. California.
As opposed to Cafeteria, California.
That's right. Just
where the food is really good.
Well, this they only serve carp. You know, they only serve carp there. You know, it's a Carpinteria. Lynda.com online.
Bill and Ted's Big Adventure. Watch it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That was actually covered in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
It probably
by the way.
Was.
That's right. They ate at the Carpinteria every day.
They are from Carpinteria.
That's right. Lynda.com online training library teaches computer skills in a video format to members through monthly and annual subscription-based plans. So that's what we do at Stratford. We've, you know, students take all over these computer classes, and there are these great resources in Lynda.com. So we have purchased the right for all of our students to use Lynda.com. So integrated into all of our online activities at Stratford, we have links to all these resources, and they've got really some great, great videos that they're really helpful to the students. Now, but then she reached a point in life, she says, you know, I don't know if I want to do Lynda.com forever. I need to sort of scale up and have an exit plan. So she decided she needed to scale up. So by 2013, she had grown to nearly 500 employees, full-time employees. She had around 140 teachers. Now, what she does with the teachers, it's a revenue-sharing deal. So they get a cut on all the revenue, a percentage of the revenue of all the videos that are watched that they produce. So that was a very clever way for her to add content without having to pay for the production costs. So she's got about 140 instructors that are creating content for it. Then she decided I have to scale. In January of 2013, she got $103 million in venture capital money. Now, these VCs, they want you to scale and exit.
Uh-huh.
So this first VC funding was led by Accel Partners and Spectrum Equity. In January 14th of 2015, that's 2 years later, they received another $186 million in financing, venture capital financing, from the TPG Capital Group. So they were really scaling up, and they actually they purchased a couple of companies along the way in order to scale the number of users and make it look very attractive to someone who'd want to purchase it. And bingo, April 7th, 2015, and that would just be, a week or so ago, it was purchased by LinkedIn for $1.5 billion.
Not bad.
So it was a nice scale-up activity that she did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1999, Lynda.com and United Digital Artists co-founded a couple of the Flash Forward conferences and the Flash Film Festival. And this is where they would give awards for the best Flash artwork. You know, this is Flash's. But the last one was held in 2008 because Flash has kind of fallen out of favor, I think. Weinman funded, along with her husband, the Lynda Lab, which is an experimental effects lab at her alma mater, the Evergreen State College. So there you go. Everything about Lynda Weinman. And the reason I featured her is that she actually followed a very, very nice pathway to developing a business. She followed her passion. She started with her passion, and then she pivoted a few times and changed the business model of her website. Then, when she wanted to exit, she brought in some venture capital money, scaled it up, and then packaged it for sale. So it's for somebody that just got a Bachelor of Arts in Humanities, she did quite well, you know, developing a technology company. And it was a great product that she put together.
I was just trying to find her stores online. I'm not sure they still exist. I find a Vertigo, which might be a clothing store. Do you have any idea what the stores did?
No, I have no idea.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I got no idea.
No idea. They may not.
Her stores were such big failures, I couldn't even get any information on them.
Then they're probably gone.
I would think they are gonzo.
I hope you were paying attention, because coming up, we are going to play the pop quiz on... what is this? Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2, 103. What are you laughing at?
I'm not laughing.
That's Dr. Schertz over there. And he's never seen Bill and Ted's Big Adventure. So we're going to watch that during this commercial break, and we'll be right back with the pop quiz. Stand by.
If- If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Classroom of the Airways. We've been giving you a lot of content, and now we have to assess whether you've been doing your job and listening to the show.
And retaining it.
And retaining it. Earlier in the show, we talked about Linda Weinman, the co-founder of Lynda.com. She learned computers by teaching herself on a machine that was brought home by her boyfriend. What machine did she use to learn computer application software?
It wasn't the Large Hadron Collider, was it?
No, it was not the Large Hadron Collider at all. And it has nothing to do with Einstein rings. That's the small hint that we're going to give you.
Okay. So, if you have the answer to that question, unlike me, who is completely stumped right now, you need to call us immediately. If you're calling from west of Ojai, California, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of Carpinteria, California,
yes,
where the cafeteria is, or cafeteria as we call it in America, it's 877-936-9333. Everybody else, anywhere else on the globe, can call us on the wild card line, which is 877-936-9333. Or, well, I'm sure you have yet another.
We have another. If you're calling in from Yemen and you want to have an encrypted phone call, you can call.
You got bigger
with,
trouble than us.
You can call through using Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded directly to the studio, free of charge.
Okay.
So, did you hear about the driverless car that drove across the country from California all the way to New York for the annual auto show there?
I did not, but I'm sure I'm about to.
It took 9 days. It crossed 3,400 miles. It went through 15 cities, and it was the first ever coast-to-coast trip by a driverless car. They started the Golden Gate Bridge and ended in Midtown Manhattan on Thursday.
I don't know that I would start my trip in a driverless car on a bridge.
It was organized by Delphi, the auto parts maker, to test its automated driving technology. Now, to comply with state laws, one person had to sit in the driver's seat throughout the trip just to make certain that they could take over in case there was some issue. Their other engineers on the team monitor data, which was collected during the trip. Delphi said that 99% of the trip was done with the car in the automated mode. Now, I don't know what the 1% was. Probably when they had traffic cops or something directing traffic. I don't know. The car was an Audi SQ5. It was equipped with autonomous driving technology.
Wow.
It had like radar, high-end probably it was a laser radar. It had software that made human-like decisions, such as when to exit and enter, how to exit and enter highways. It even had navigation of streets or city. It even parked itself. When it went into to the parking lot, it connected to a Wi-Fi server in the parking lot, which gave a layout of all of the available parking places, and it knew which parking places were vacant, and it just drove to a parking place and parked. So that was actually, I think this technology is moving along quite quickly, and they'll gradually solve all the problems. I think within 5 years, we're going to see a lot of autonomous vehicles out there.
You know, I've heard that there was a problem, though, with this thing. When you go through different states and different cities where sometimes the lane markings and the highway markings are a little bit different, it had some issues with that.
Yeah. So that's programming.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so you can easily, because they actually know what state they're in, so they could easily, these are all software fixes that can easily be done. The basic sensor package with laser radar, with sonars, with radar, has enough information, so everything is really software-driven. One of the big issues was pedestrians, or if you've got, say, somebody controlling traffic at construction.
Right.
Because that's like, you don't really know what that layout is, and so you have to be able to recognize the construction barriers, the fact that there's somebody trying to direct traffic. That was a very challenging feature, and they've apparently been able to handle this. And it also stops for pedestrians, so it's getting better and better and better. But one of the biggest issues is car sickness.
Really?
Because they said, you know, the cars, you can't predict how it's going to move, so they recommend that you don't turn the seats backwards, that you just face the front. And you've got monitors that show forward-facing, because if you can look out the windshield, you tend not to get car sick.
Why would you turn the seats backwards?
Because you want to have four seats facing each other.
Oh, so you can have like a little conversation
and then
while the car is...
No, and then,
way, when you hit the bridge abutment, you wouldn't actually see it coming.
That's right. And then you've got a little table in the middle, and then you can play cards. Because it's just like... It's a passenger
pod. It's like being on the auto train.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, Doc, we don't have a winner yet, so why don't we ask the question one more time?
All right. We talked about Linda Weinman. She's co-founder of Lynda.com. She learned computer applications and all about computers using the computer that her boyfriend brought home. What was that computer that she used to learn her computer applications?
And of course, the number is 877-936-9333, 877-936-9333.
Now there is a question. You know, this is kind of linked. Could autopilot have saved this German Wings flight? You know, where the pilot just flew it.
Isn't that what doomed it?
Flew it is.
The guy programmed the autopilot to 100 feet.
Except, you see, the question is, though, is that the autopilot, when it started getting too close to land, would automatically come up, and he had to reset it.
Oh, he did. Okay.
So he had to keep going back and tell it, because it wanted to override it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing is, there was no way for the airplane to override the pilot. And so the question is, would you ever want to have software in an airplane that could not be overridden by the pilot?
I think that's problematic.
You see, so this is the issue. So after 9/11... This was about 10 years ago. They started considering that, you know, after the 9/11, two guys flew two airplanes into the World Trade Center. So had those airplanes been on 100% autopilot and it could not be overridden, it would not have allowed anyone to hit the building. So the question was, would that be a good idea? And the feeling was that the unintended consequences of that would not be good. There could be some sort of unpredictable event or some sort of mechanical failure, and then the pilot would not be able to override what was going on. So they decided not to do it. But after the German Wings flight, they're going back to revisit it. So now what I'm beginning to think, though, with all of this driverless car technology and with the advent of more sophisticated software, maybe it's not such a bad idea.
Well, how about this idea? Instead of having something in the airplane that can't be overridden, how about if you could monitor these things from the ground? Say air traffic control could monitor this, and if they saw that this thing was doing something that it couldn't have done, or shouldn't have been doing, you could override it from the ground.
Well, that may be a good
because you'd still have that human... But then again, you know, every time you get a computer involved, there's a possibility for that to fail. And there's a possibility. I guess the message is, or the lesson is, there's nothing is 100% foolproof.
Nothing is 100% foolproof. But I just thought we'd the topic this week.
Yes,
that sort of makes sense with driverless.
Well, Doc, we do have somebody
to talk to.
Well,
okay.
We don't know how to have a winner yet. We have somebody on the phone to talk to. Bear with me one second here.
All right.
Is going to be Jerry. Who is calling on line one? Jerry, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, Dr. Schertz asked a question.
Earlier in the show, Jerry, I talked about Linda Weinman, co-founder of Lynda.com. What computer did she learn to her computer applications on?
Apple IIe.
That is correct.
Jerry, you are the winner. Dr. Schertz, please tell him what he's won.
You win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karim Dining Room. Just stay on the line, and we'll get those tickets out to you next week.
Jerry, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling, and stand by for Andrew on hold here, and he will take your information from you. You are indeed listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. More of Tech Talk Radio is coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University Innovative Approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And for 2 years, they've been hard at work upgrading the Large Hadron Collider. Now, what this Large Hadron Collider does, it's a circular ring that's 17 miles in circumference, and they'll take two beams that are counter-rotating in opposite directions, and they accelerate these two beams up to a very high speed, and then they cross them over and let them collide. So they're colliding protons together at a very high speed, and they're trying to then create the conditions that occurred just when the universe is being created during the Big Bang Theory. So there are all these guys working at the Large Hadron Collider to bring this thing up. And, of course, there's a singing group there, isn't there? It's called the Cernettes.
The Cernettes, yes.
These are their wives who are sitting at home while they're... Let's hear the Cernettes talking about...
We should actually talk this up a little bit. Yeah, because they don't sing until a few seconds.
So, see, the Cernettes are really sad because the boys are never home. They're always at the Large Hadron Collider getting it going.
There you go. You hit the post.
You always promise, but you never date me. I try to fax, but it's busy always. Ooh, what? I tried a network, but she crashed the gateways. Ooh, what? You never spend your nights with me. You don't go out with other girls either. You only love your collider.
So there you have it. The Cernettes, everybody. The top of the charts this week here on Computer Top 40.
All the lonely ladies there waiting for their men to come home after they're working on the Large Hadron Collider. Well, on Easter, they actually cranked the Large Hadron Collider up to 450 giga electron volts. That was sort of the beginning, that was like a very
450 billion volts.
Yeah, giga electron volts. They were just sort of steering them, storing them up. They weren't adding much energy. That was a sort of a low energy starter beam. Well, this week, on April 10th, 2015, actually it was the same day that you could pre-order the Apple Watch. I don't know why that happened. They cranked it up to the full to the full to the full rated speed objective of 6,500 giga electron volts. This is the target for the year. So when they collide two beams together, you'll have an energy which is double that, or 13,000 giga electron volts. It'd be double that, and that's when they get all kinds of new physics. You remember last year, they were just at around they were just colliding at about half that to speed. So the collision was only generating 6,500 giga electron volts, and they discovered the Higgs boson, so-called the God's particle. It turns out the Higgs boson was needed as part of the standard model of the atom, because the standard model, none of the particles had any mass. And they knew that a proton weighed more than an electron, so they said, what's going on here? There's no mass. And so somebody said, well, maybe there is this extra field that interacts with the particles, maybe like molasses would interact with things, and if you have more interaction with them, you're heavier. And if you have less interaction with this extra field, you're lighter. And so they proposed this Higgs boson field. And of course, every field in particle theory can be either a particle or a field. And so that corresponds to a particular particle, the Higgs boson. So they cranked it up last year, 2 years ago, and they discovered the Higgs boson. It was exactly what it was supposed to be. It was just perfect. So it fit into the standard model perfectly. And the physicist says, well, this is great. Everything is just perfect. But there was one problem. The universe has dark energy.
Uh-huh.
You see, the universe, if you have normal mass in the universe, of course, it's attracting. And as the universe would expand, it would actually start slowing down because of all the attractive gravitational forces. And it would start slowing down, and then it would eventually contract again. Well, the problem is the universe is expanding at a faster rate. So something is pushing the universe apart. So there's some kind of anti-gravity force which is pushing it apart, which we can't actually see. We can't actually measure, but we can see the effects of it. And so they call it the dark energy.
Ooh.
And so they really want to look at the features of the Higgs boson, because they believe that the Higgs boson might, in fact, interact with the particles that we don't know anything about that represent the dark energy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're hoping that the Higgs boson and features of the Higgs boson are going to connect us to the dark energy, which is like half the mass of the universe or more. So this was what they're hoping for with this giant Large Hadron Collider.
Wasn't there also some fear that when they crank this thing up, they could actually bring an end to the world as life as we know it?
There are some wackos that are saying we could generate a black hole and we could suck the whole Earth in it. This is just not going to happen.
I mean, you're so confident.
It's just not going to happen. And so they're really hoping to look for that. They're also looking for antimatter. You mm-hmm. see, every electron has an anti-electron, every proton has an anti-proton. So they'd like to understand, like an anti-electron is called a positron. So they would actually like to understand the antimatter better, and they think that this will also allow them to do this. There's also another thing they're looking for. You see, all the forces in the universe are very strong. Like you've got the electromagnetic forces. You've got the weak nuclear forces, strong nuclear forces. These are all very strong forces. And this gravitational force is really super weak. So they think, why is it so weak? And so they postulate that it's because there are more dimensions in the universe than we know about, hidden dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And they think some of the energy might be sneaking out some of these other dimensions. So they're going to also be looking for other dimensions.
Ooh.
Other dimensions. So these are some of the things they're going to be looking at. In fact, the Large Hadron Collider. So all the guys are really happy. And the CERNets are sad. Oh. They're saying, the CERNets, the Large Hadron Collider was off for 2 years. At least they saw their boys a little bit. But now they're off again, playing physics.
The CERNets actually broke up. I guess they gave up on the guys at some point.
They did?
Yeah, didn't they? There was a farewell tour. At least it says so here. The goodbye CERN gig was July 21st, 2012.
Yeah, but that was probably when they just launched the Large Hadron Collider. I'll bet they reformed.
They probably will have a reunion tour. Listen to this. On July 21st, 2012, we said goodbye to our CERN fans who saw us being born 24 years ago. This went on for a long time.
Wow.
that's a long time.
Poor CERNets. They've been waiting for their boys for a long time.
I know. So,
let's talk about the Einstein ring.
Okay.
Okay. You know that since we're talking about Large Hadron Collider and all those gravitational things, it turned out that Einstein, in his general theory of relativity, found out that a mass bends light. So, mm-hmm. like if light goes very near the sun, it's going to kind of be bent a little bit by the massive size of the sun. Or if mass goes around a black hole, which is super. I mean, if light goes around a black hole, which is super big mass, it will be bent. Well, it turned out that if you can use this bending of light as a lens effect. So if there's a very dense object between you and something you want to see a long distance away, you can actually get a gravitational lens, which Einstein predicted. And that gravitational lens will give you the artifacts of a lens. So there's a galaxy, SDP.81, which is 12 billion light years away.
Billion.
12 billion light years away. Now that means this galaxy was formed before our solar system was even formed. Hmm. I mean, it's so old. 12 billion light years away. Normally, it's so far away and be so faint that we couldn't see it. But it turned out it's exactly lined up with something else, which is only 4 billion light years away. And that's a relatively near galaxy, which is 4 billion light years away. And so by sheer luck, the galaxy, which is 4 billion light years away, is exactly lined up with the galaxy that's 12 billion light years away. So the one that's 4 billion light years away is just perfect to serve as a gravitational lens. And so they looked at that. And I got a picture of this thing, of the Einstein ring there, Jim, and it looks just like a little donut.
It sure does.
And so what
it is? A galactic donut.
And so, like, if you take a point and you slightly defocus a little bit, you'll get like a ring in optics. So this looks just like an optical artifact that you'd get in a regular lens, except this was done with a gravitational lens, and it's called an Einstein ring. I just thought that was really...
That's very interesting.
Thought that was really interesting. And the nice thing is that because that lens actually focused the light from this faraway galaxy, we can see the faraway galaxy better than we could have without the lens. If we didn't have the lens, we wouldn't see it at all. Mm-hmm. So this is allowing us to look 12 billion light years away because of that gravitational
Amazing.
Lensing. I just thought that was fascinating.
That is very interesting.
Listen, the app of the week is Office Lens. I just love this. I downloaded Office Lens. You take and you point this at, you open up Office Lens. It's either on the Android or the iPhone, and you point it at, say, a letter. It will photograph the letter, and it will automatically then convert that to a Word document for you, right? So you don't have to scan it and do all this.
Mm-hmm.
It'll basically scan it right away and convert it to a Word document, and then it will upload it to the drive online.
I'm having the girls sing us out this
week. Oh, that's it. So listen, I love that Office Lens, and it gives you a very quick way to convert letters to Word. Listen, I love the CERNets.
Aren't
sound
they great?
So good. Listen, we love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu and go to the Stratford website and check out the programs and tell them that you heard about them on Tech Talk Radio.
If you tuned in late today and would like to hear this program in its entirety, it will replay at 4 o'clock here on this station tomorrow. We'll see you next week on Tech Talk Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CERNets.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFMHD2 Manassas, WTLPFMHD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Sunny, nice today, high in the mid-60s. Right now in the nation's capital, we have 56 degrees at 10 o'clock.
This paid commercial may not represent